Chapter 8. As it turned out, I did not call Charlene Williams that night. For supper, Mom and I took Sophie out to eat. It seemed little enough that we could do in return for her hospitality. I had never been a big meat eater. In fact, I thought I could happily eat only fruits, nuts, and vegetables the rest of my life. But the steak I had that night at one of Amarillo's most popular restaurants was enough to make me change my mind. After supper, feeling comfortably full and sleepy, my only thoughts were of that inviting bed in Sophie's upstairs guest room. I must have been asleep by the time my head hit the pillow. The next morning, the aroma of fresh ground coffee made me think for a moment that I was at home, until I realized that Sophie must be an early riser, too. I glanced at the other twin bed, empty. I was sure that my mother and Sophie, these two newfound friends, were downstairs talking. Quickly, slipping into my blue robe and fuzzy slippers, I followed my nose down to the kitchen. Sure enough, Mom and Sophie were sitting in the small breakfast alcove, sharing cups of coffee and a morning chat. Tears shone in Sophie's eyes, and I guessed they had been talking about Andrea. Mom turned in my direction. "Sophie was just telling me about Andrea's ranch, the Inglenook. She would like for us to see it today. How does that sound to you?"
"Please help yourself to coffee, Darcy," Sophie said. "I hope you like flapjacks. Bacon is there on the stove, too. Everything is still hot."
Pouring coffee into a waiting cup and snagging some bacon, I followed my hostess's directions. "That sounds great, Mom," I said. "But will you have time to do that, Sophie? What about your shop?"
"I've talked to Carol. She can handle things today. She's very competent. Did you two bring jeans? Something that can straddle a horse?"
Mom's eyes grew large.
"You want us to ride horses?"
Sophie smiled.
"Can you?"
"Well, sure," Mom said. "I guess, Darcy."
"That sounds like fun. It's been a long time since I've been on the back of a horse."
"It's the best way to see the Inglenook," Sophie said. "Some ranchers have started using ATVs, but we prefer the horse. He's much quieter and, in a pinch, can maybe get a cowboy out of trouble. Besides, the all-terrain vehicle is noisy and scares the cattle. The ranch is out beyond the Palo Duro Canyon. It's a wonderful canyon about 25 miles southeast of town."
An hour later, we were on the rim of the fabled canyon, the second largest in the United States. I could hardly believe my eyes. It was breathtaking and a complete departure from the flatness of the prairie. Sophie braked her Ford truck and we tumbled out to stare at this natural wonder. The only word I could think to say was, "Amazing."
"It's 120 miles long and 20 miles wide in places," Sophie said. "The deepest part is over 800 feet. Beautiful, isn't it?"
Beautiful didn't do the canyon justice. The moss greens, yellow ochre, rust, and mauve canyon walls spread out below me as far as I could see. Scudding clouds continually changed the colors.
"What caused all this?" Mom asked. "Of course I know that God did, but what did he use?"
Sophie laughed.
"He used the prairie dog town fork of the Red River. That and wind have gradually eroded these rocks."
Mom pointed into the distance.
"I could swear that's a lighthouse over there."
"In a way, it is," Sophie said. "At least that's what the rock formation is called."
Palo Duro, what a place. "And what does its name mean?" I asked.
"It's Spanish for hard wood," Sophie said. "Yes, it's a remarkable area. The deer, wild turkey, coyotes, mountain lions, bobcats, rattlesnakes, and many other animals seem to enjoy it. Of course, it's their natural home, and like us humans, there's no place like home."
"Did you say rattlesnakes?" I climbed back into the truck. "Maybe the best way to view the canyon is from the safety of your truck, Sophie."
"It's time we moved on anyway. The ranch is a few miles farther, and I want us to have plenty of time to explore."
30 miles later, Sophie turned her truck from the main road onto a narrow graveled lane. A tall iron gate straddled the lane. A wood sign swung from the top of the gate. One word, Engle Nook, had been burned into the sign. "What's that beside the ranch name?" I asked, pointing at a symbol etched into the sign.
"It's a flame," Sophie said. "And, of course, the W under it is for Williams, the Flaming W. It's the ranch's brand."
We bumped across a cattle guard and were within the Engle Nook. A long driveway curved around a small pond bordered by a few willows.
"I'm glad there's plenty of water in the tank," Sophie said as we bounced past.
"Tank?" I asked.
"The pond," Sophie said, grinning.
3 sorrel horses looked up as we passed. I couldn't see any sign of human habitation until we topped a small rise. There, spread out in front of us, were enough buildings to furnish a small town.
"Are all these a part of the ranch?" Mom asked.
"Yes," Sophie said. "It takes a good many buildings to run a 30,000-acre cattle ranch. In addition to the main house, there's a house for the overseer, the bunkhouse for the cowboys, cook shack, tack room, machinery shed, gasoline tanks, the barns. A lot of buildings, but each one plays an important part on the ranch."
"My favorite is the big red old-fashioned barn that looks like it belongs in the 19th century," Mom said.
"Actually, it does. That's the original barn. It has been kept in good repair, re-roofed and painted when needed."
"Always painted red, I'll bet," I said.
"Yes, old-timers used materials they had on hand. Ferrous oxide, milk, linseed oil, and lime. The paint had the added attraction of killing moss and stuff they didn't want growing on the walls. The ferrous oxide caused the paint to be red, and we've kept up that color 'cause it seems to fit. Now let's go over to the horse corral and see what Oscar has picked out for you to ride."
Oscar turned out to be one of the ranch hands. He was standing by a group of horses in the corral, a curry comb in his hand. He looked up as Sophie parked the truck and we 3 women tumbled out. He touched his wide-brimmed hat.
"Me Sophie," he said. "These fellas ought to be just about right for you all."
3 horses, 2 pintos and a shiny black, were saddled and bridled, their reins looped loosely around a corral post. Sophie's mount was the quarter horse. Star, she called him because of the white spot on his forehead. The pintos were for Mom and me. The cook had prepared sack lunches for us, and Sophie slipped these into Star's saddlebags before putting her booted foot into the stirrup and swinging onto his tall back. Sophie had brought along 2 hats that happily fit us. She told us we needed them to protect our faces from the sun. I wasn't sure whether the wind would let them stay on our heads, but Sophie was the expert here. Oscar helped Mom into the saddle. I determined to mount on my own, so I grabbed the saddle horn, stuck the toe of my left boot into the left stirrup, and swung up. Funny how tall I felt on the back of this little pinto. Sophie led the way, and our horses, Mint and Julep, obediently trotted after Star as he left the corral.
"How you doing, Mom?" I asked as I glanced over at her.
My mother wore a grin that took about 10 years off her face.
"I haven't had such a lot of fun in a long time," she said. "I had forgotten how much I used to enjoy riding."
I had to admit it was exhilarating. I could understand how my ancestors must have loved their horses and the feeling of being in control of all this bridled power. Hopefully, tomorrow my muscles wouldn't be paying for the fun I was having today. The prairie stretched away from us on all sides. Wind blew the grass in waves reminiscent of the ocean. The denim jacket I wore felt welcome because, although the sun shone, the wind definitely was chilly. The rise and fall of the landscape was so gradual that I didn't realize we weren't riding through flat land until I looked behind me and could see no sign of the ranch buildings. In the distance, white-faced cattle grazed. The sky shone with a clear blue so bright that it hurt my eyes. There was no sound in all the world except the clop of our horses' hooves, the creak of saddles, and the wind blowing through the sage. Sophie dropped back to ride between us.
"This is where the Inglenook borders the Mott Ranch," she said.
Drawing back on the reins, she looked down.
"What's this?"
A roll of barbed wire, with some fence posts stacked beside it, lay in our path. Mom and I stopped Mint and Julep beside Star. Sophie slid off her mount and kicked the posts. When Sophie looked up at us, her cheeks were flushed.
"That Tom Mott, he is trying to fence off part of our land again. He did this once before, and I had to go talk to a lawyer to prevent him from actually taking part of our land. He wants this ranch so bad that he will stop at nothing to get it. He doesn't care whether it's all in a parcel or little bits at a time, just so he gets the Inglenook."
Did Sophie realize what she said about Tom stopping at nothing? Maybe my tired brain wasn't functioning full throttle, but this was hard to puzzle out. The Inglenook Ranch belonged to Andrea. She had been Tom's wife but divorced him and remarried. After her second marriage, she disappeared. Legally, the ranch was still hers because it was too soon to have Andrea declared dead, but how would it profit Tom for Andrea to be dead? The ranch was out of his reach anyway, wasn't it? Sophie frowned as she swung back into the saddle. She pointed to a large spreading cottonwood standing like a lonely sentinel atop a knoll in the vastness of the prairie.
"Oh, let's forget about it for now and not let that miserable Tom Mott spoil a perfectly nice day. There's a spring over there by those trees and some flat rocks. It's a good picnic place. That's where we'll stop for lunch," she said.
This was welcome news. Breakfast happened a long time ago, and something about being in the open air gave me an appetite. I gingerly dismounted and clung to the saddle horn until I was sure I could walk. Mom laughed.
"I think you could be called a tenderfoot, Darcy."
She was already standing with Sophie under the cottonwood, helping spread our lunch on the flat-topped gray rock. How had she dismounted so quickly and walked with no assistance after that ride? "It's not my feet that are tender," I said. "Aren't you even just a little bit stiff?"
"No more than usual. At my age, I get used to a few aches and pains, not like you youngsters who just haven't been around as long."
She winked at Sophie, and they both giggled like two schoolgirls. Following Sophie's lead, I tethered Mint to a scrub bush and hobbled over to join them.
"Your cook knows how to put together a meal," I said as I bit into a roast beef sandwich.
"Yes, I do believe that Myron is probably the best cook in the county."
"Myron? I expected a name like Slim or Cookie or Sourdough,"
Mom answered for Sophie.
"Good heavens, Darcy, I think all you know about the West is what you've read in books."
Sophie shaded her eyes with her hand and looked into the distance.
"Uh-oh," she said. "Here comes trouble."
A horseman topped a ridge and trotted in our direction. Reining in, he rested his arms on the saddle horn and leaned toward us. Sophie got to her feet and faced him.
"Tom Mott, what are you doing out here?"
The man, sitting astride his beautiful bay horse, seemed to be perfectly at home in the saddle. Looking up, I met a pair of the most hostile hazel eyes I had ever seen. So this was Tom Mott, Andrea's first husband. He wore a dusty black hat over longish sandy hair, a light blue jacket, and faded blue jeans. Tom was a small man, wiry and muscular. His lean face was set in hard lines. How could Andrea have been attracted to a man who looked like a picture straight off a wanted poster? Did she enjoy an element of danger? There was just no accounting for whims of the heart.
I could ask you the same question, Miss Sophie, ma'am.
Sophie's voice was low and tense.
This is my ranch. I have every right to be here. Maybe, maybe not. I'm thinking the surveyor I've hired may have a different idea about this strip of the ingle nook. Did you notice I'm ready to run a fence to be sure that my cattle don't mix with yours? Pretty neighborly of me, I think.
Sophie's hands clenched into fists. Mom and I scrambled up to stand beside her.
You know good and well that your property line is back at least half a mile, she said through clenched teeth. What no good surveyor and lawyer have you hired this time?
Tom Mott looked for all the world like a sly fox when he grinned.
I guess we'll just have to wait and see, won't we, Miss Sophie, ma'am?
He lifted the reins, and his horse moved away at a gallop. We watched until he disappeared below a swell in the prairie.